I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia is dealing with a crisis, really an epidemic of gun violence, with 351 homicides last year, the highest rate in more than 5 years, and more than 1,400 non-fatal shootings. Imagine that. If you do the math, that's about 4 shootings every day. Previous administrations have addressed the problem with a series of programs, and the Kenney administration is doing the same with the announcement of the Philadelphia Roadmap to Safer Communities. It largely takes a public health approach to this violence by focusing on crisis intervention in at-risk neighborhoods, job training, blight cleanup, violence prevention programs, support services for those released from prison. Today on Radio Times, the root causes of this rising rate of gun violence. Will this roadmap fix the problem? And if not this, what? We have 4 guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio, and let me introduce them all to you. Helen Ubinius is a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Helen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And sitting next to her, Vanessa Garrett Harley is the Deputy Managing Director for Criminal Justice and Public Safety for the City of Philadelphia. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Next to her, Shauna Ravel, Executive Director for the Office of Violence Prevention for the City of Philadelphia. Shauna Ravel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. And rounding out our quartet of guests, we've got Anton Moore. He's president and founder of Unity in the Community. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness to change the culture of violence in South Philadelphia. He's also ward leader of the 48th. Anton Moore, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Where to start? Let's start with the fact that yesterday, a 24-year-old man was fatally shot in West Philadelphia. 2 people were critically injured in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. Let me begin with you, Vanessa Garrett Harley. What is behind this rising rate of gun violence?
I don't know if I can actually answer the question, what is behind it. I can certainly tell you that we are all disturbed by the reports that you just read, and we hear them far too much. We see far too much on the news, and so we're doing everything we can to come up with innovative ways to try to address them. The gun violence in the city, we have called it out as a public health crisis. I think the mayor very rightly called it out as that. Using that public health approach allows us to take a very comprehensive look to try and get at not just the sort of policing or enforcement aspect of it, but actually try to address the root causes of the gun violence.
Let me turn to you, Shauna Ravel, and to really all of you, because I think it's important to understand what the problem is so we can figure out what the right solution is. What do you think is driving this rate of homicide?
I think it's a multi-answered question. You know, you have different neighborhoods in Philadelphia that have different issues, you know, blight, you know, economic situations, you know, drug use and abuse, family situations. You know, we can talk about the lack of family support in some situations, you know. But I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, Deputy Garrett Harley touched on is that, you know, moving and looking forward is how can you come up with solutions?
Right.
You know, you got to look at it from a holistic approach. You know, you're not going to have every solution for every neighborhood, but what works and what doesn't work. You know, and trying to, I guess, involve the community as much as possible, we've seen that, you know, makes a big difference.
And I do want to get to what the city is doing, but I'm curious, Helen, from your perspective, you've been covering this. You did a really extraordinary series about people who have been victims of violence, who have lived and survived and struggled to keep their life together. What do you see as the reason for this?
I think they've pointed out rightly what the issues are, and there are many more behind those. What the piece that I wrote really delved into is another reality. Another part of this is that when people get shot in Philadelphia, not everyone is shot and dies.
In fact, most live.
Right. So for the last, 10 years, we've had upwards of 7,000 shootings, unsolved shootings, right? So there are hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals out there with life-changing injuries. And so that's another part of this story that we have to really address.
Let me give you the last word on this part of the show. Anton, what do you see as someone in the community? What's driving this violence?
I mean, you see a sense of hopelessness in the communities from the parents. You see lack of fathers in the household. You see lack of engagement in a lot of neighborhoods. When you talk to young people and you talk to parents, a lot of these are fatherless households. So when you look at that, you know, we ask a young man, you know, we want you to be a young boy and turn into a man. How can they be that when you don't have a man in the household to show them how to be a man? So you look at that, and then you look at poverty. A lot of these families are struggling. My mother, she worked 3 jobs to try to put food on the table while we were home, and my brothers and sisters, we watched each other. So you have to look at that, the household of, you know, the wages in the city and different things like that, opportunities.
A myriad of problems. Let me go back, and this was included in this Philadelphia Roadmap to Save Our Communities, going back to 2013-2014, and there was something called Focused Deterrence. I remember doing a show about it where it was really focusing in, perhaps I'll look at you, Shondell, focusing in on some very specific communities where people were at risk for being either perpetrators or victims of violence, and it looked like it worked. Did it?
To a certain extent, yeah. It was focused on South Philadelphia, and the model at first did work. I think with a little bit of tweaking, and I know we're looking at different models and bringing different models back to Philadelphia now, improving on social service aspect of it. You know, you got to have the carrot and you got to have the stick.
Right.
And I think increasing, and I think a lot will agree that increasing that carrot part, I think, is what really we need to focus on in making a program work.
Carrot being jobs,
yes,
opportunities,
jobs,
support
opportunities,
services.
Right, right. Social service, when people need it. That's very important. Not, you know, take the information down. We'll get back to you in a few weeks. When somebody's in need and they need it, you need to kind of be there to kind of put these services in place.
Looking at these numbers, 2013-2014, there were 246 homicides, 248, so still a lot of people, but a lot less than the 351 that we're talking about today. To you, Vanessa Garrett Harley, is there something we can learn from what happened back then and apply to today?
Certainly trying to look at that. We work very closely with the police department to try and determine what might have been going on then that was not going on now. As Shondell just told you, we are definitely exploring whether or not we would implement focused deterrence again and looking at other models like that, other evidence-based type models to determine what might work to help. But you can't always tell what drives crime down in much the same way that you can't always directly tell what drives crime up.
Well, there was something in the, I guess it's the editorial board of the Philadelphia Inquirer looking at this particular focused deterrence. According to Temple University analysis, the program reduced crime in South Philadelphia by 35% between 2013 and 2015. Helen, let me turn to you, as I know you have been a critic of some of what the city is coming up with. What is your main criticism?
I think my main... I've been a critic of throwing lots of money without really knowing what works and what doesn't. I am not critical of the efforts. I think that there's a lot of well-intentioned people trying a lot of different things. But I think that the days of throwing millions of dollars at people and programs without assessing what works and what doesn't needs to end. I think that is not going to improve the situation that we're in right now. It's not just about programs. It's also and it's not just about homicide rates. We have to look at the bigger picture. We have to look at the amount of shootings. Unsolved shootings happening in this city means that there are guns and people out there who have shot people and are walking around like nothing's happening. We have to look at the clearance rate, which frankly is embarrassing. We need to do a better job, because if we don't, what we have in the city of Philadelphia are killers or potential killers walking around, potentially doing this again.
I'm looking at a headline from Bobby Allen from WHYY Philly Police. 60% of murders investigated in 2018 remain unsolved. Is that what you're referring to?
Right.
So,
and behind that number, we have to remember, behind all the numbers we talk about are people whose lives are affected, whether they were killed, whether their child was killed or paralyzed. This is affecting whole communities.
So what works, Anton Moore?
To me, I think what best works is we have to come out of the office. We have to come out of the office, and we have to look in the mirror and hold ourselves accountable. From city government to people in the neighborhood, we know what's going on. When conversations take place. But what they're step conversations, they're barbershop conversations, and it's kitchen table conversations. If we want peace, we have to practice peace. You can't say... And then this is how it looks on social media.
Sure.
You can't say on one side, oh, free such and such after they shoot up the neighborhood, and then say you want peace on the other side. It's not going to happen that way. And until we address that as a community and from a political standpoint, it's issues. You know, it was disturbing when I read something about a year and a half ago. Someone said, you know, people don't ask for jobs. They ask for such and such. And that bothered me, because sometimes you have to ask the question of what is happening behind closed doors. I've, on my own, made phone calls on my own to different employers and say, hey, look, I need you to hire some people. And it's worked. So sometimes I wonder, what are people doing behind closed doors? Are they really fighting for the neighborhood, or are they fighting just to hold the title or a seat and just be there and exist?
Well, let me go back to you, Vanessa Garrett Harley. I read the roadmap, and it does call for community engagement, community buy-in. What can the city of Philadelphia do that it hasn't been doing to get community support?
I think Anton just raised a good point, and it is about getting out into the community to learn what's going on in the community. It's the only way you're going to develop community trust, is to go into the community, talk to the community, listen to their solutions. We did some of that as we were creating that plan. We went on what we called a community listening tour so that we could find out what was going on. We did focus group with young men who were affected by this, everything from young men who have been charged as adults with gun crimes to the juvenile lifers, to try and hear about them. But definitely that, but also thinking about empowering the community and helping to revitalize the community. And that's where the blight reduction strategy comes in at. Getting rid of all of these dangerous or unsafe houses in the community, all of these overgrown lots, the cleaner and greener lots, just so aesthetically it looks better and people begin to feel better. The job piece that Anton just spoke about is a huge part of it, is the workforce development, not only developing jobs, but work readiness and work preparedness, and also education. We have a large number of what we call opportunity youth, meaning that they're not connected to education or employment, and we definitely have to work within the systems to develop them so that they are ready and able to do something. And it is about developing a living wage so that when people get a job, they can make enough money to sustain their families, that they don't think that they have to go back out and do this criminal element in order to maintain themselves.
Shonda Ravel, we have a minute before we have to take our break, but let me just toss this at you and we can finish up after the break, because I know you have worked directly on the street with young people. Yeah. What do they tell you?
You know, they tell me that, you know, they're sometimes afraid to come off their porch. You know, you're talking to teens that, you know, don't want to be in the situation they're in. They don't want to be in the corners. You know, they want to have some type of control over their lives. You know, because of certain situations, they're forced to do, you know, what they deem as ways of, or means of getting over or dealing with the situation. We need to put more tools in the toolbox. We need to give them more more options. You know, they don't see a different option. You know, so how is that? You know, I fully agree with Anton is saying that, you know, you need to kind of find a way of bridging this gap with young people. You know, work with a lot of different agencies. A lot of different people are doing good work. But, you know, how can the city support that? You know, meet with different agencies, individuals all the time. You know, we have the Terry Glasgow's in South Philadelphia, you know, Kazar in Cobbs Creek, Daryl Schuler in North Philly, you know, and on and on. How do you develop programs and how you develop systems where you empower these people to come to the communities and bridge these gaps?
We are going to take that short break, get back to our conversation. We're talking about the epidemic of gun violence in the city of Philadelphia. 351 people killed last year, 1,400 shootings. We're going to take a short break. I'll reintroduce our guests. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the ongoing crisis of violent crime in Philadelphia, the communities and individuals affected by gun violence, the root causes, and the city's efforts to stem it. And again, our guests are Vanessa Garrett Harley. She's Deputy Managing Director for Criminal Justice and Public Safety for the City of Philadelphia. Shondell Ravel, Executive Director for the Office of Violence Prevention for the City of Philadelphia. Helen Ubinas, a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Anton Moore, President and Founder of Unity in the Community, a nonprofit dedicated to raising awareness to change the culture of violence in South Philadelphia. You can join us by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Helen, let me go back to you, and I'm also looking at this report, the Shooting Victims and Perpetrators 2017. Victims, 57.3% are black males under the age of 35, 17% black males over the age of 35, perpetrators, 63.9% black males under the age of 35, 11.8% black males over the age of 35. Also, something like 70% of both victims and perpetrators are known to the criminal justice system. taking that information, what do you think would be effective in dealing with both sides of this problem, both the victims and the perpetrators?
This sort of piggybacks on something that was said earlier about empowering the communities who are most affected by this. And I think that every day as a columnist, as a reporter, as I'm out in the communities reporting, what I see are individuals who are perhaps not connected to an agency, are absolutely not funded, but are grassroots, on the streets, on the ground, making an impact every day, whether it's one-on-one conversations or just knowing sort of who to talk to perhaps keep an incident from sort of blowing up even worse. And I think that the city has to connect with more of these individuals. Mm-hmm. There are some connections, but I think that, you know, sort of these point people change almost daily, you know. So the point people that were making an impact, say, 5, even 2 years ago, aren't necessarily the ones that are sort of resonating with the kids today. And so I think there has to be more of that connection to truly empower the community, but also to make an impact before these individuals become, you know, statistics.
You're talking about a relationship.
Yeah. And that's actually what's lacking. You know, Anton talked about relationships, family relationships, but there has to be relationships between people who make decisions, who hold the purse strings, and the actual people who are affected by their decisions.
Chandela Revelle, let me turn to you. And I remember interviewing some people from Drexel University talking about healing hurt people, the idea that hurt people hurt people. From the work that you would have done on the street, does that make sense?
It does make sense. You know, and I fully agree. You know, we definitely need to further the relationship. I think that's what we're doing. You know, it's a big part of the plan. And Deputy Gary Harley, you know, she supports that and the mayor supports that. And we're pushing forward on that. You know, but as in any relationship, you know, it takes time to kind of build that trust. And I think by being out there in the street at 2 a.m. when I'm talking to people, when they're at their lowest, you know, providing that needed service when they need it, it helps build our credibility. And I think that's where we're at right now, building the credibility and trying to empower these people, building that relationship, forming a relationship. You know, is it enough? You know, what's enough? Hmm. You see what I'm saying? But we are continuing, you know, to form these relationships every day.
Is it big incidents, little incidents? I mean, if we're looking at 351 homicides and 1,400 shootings last year,
I really do. You know, to be honest, it's all that. You know, the smallest incident, you know, can turn into the biggest incident in the community. It can start from a simple argument that happened at 3 a.m. and then lead to a shooting, a multiple shooting, 2 days from then, you know. And I think, you know, we'll talk about the crisis intervention program, but how these credible messengers are in the neighborhoods, you know, how they're forming relationships. But, you know, when you're there, when there's a small incident, you can stop that incident, mm-hmm. you know, the ripple effect is incredible. Is really incredible. And I know that Deputy Gary Harley is going to talk about how we're looking at empowering the community with microgrants as well. You know, something very powerful that we're doing.
You want to speak to that? And then, Anton, I'll get you back in on the conversation.
So just want to speak to two things. The microgrants, we're calling them targeted community investment grants, go to and hopefully will help address some of the problem that Helen just called out, which is that there are some folks in the community who are doing phenomenal work. Right. And that does change. There are grassroots organizations who are not supported, particularly in a financial way, by anyone and would not be able to have the infrastructure or the ability to necessarily navigate all the red tape to get a contract with the city. Right. However, what we're doing is we currently have a RFP posted for a fiduciary that will act as the fiduciary and also as the person to kind of train and provide that infrastructure. And we will be offering what we call targeted community investment grants so that we can help fund some of these folks and so that we can put some money back into these communities and for the folks who know the communities and the people in the community best. I would also say, as Chandel said on that CCIP program, the hours that they work are from 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. Thursday through Sunday. That was done intentionally based on looking at the data that's the time frame when most of the crime occurs. And not only are they out there hoping to try to head off something before it occurs, but even after a shooting occurs, sometimes they're at the hospitals talking to the families and others, because many of the shootings, to go to your question, we've seen have been sort of reciprocal, right, or retaliation type. Okay, shootings. And if you could stop that from escalating as it goes forward, that's one of the issues. And also, we have seen a very marked increase in shootings where drugs is the motive.
Ah.
And so the situation in the city around our pervasive poverty, as well as the opioid crisis that we're facing, and even some of the drug crimes weren't about opioids. It was about marijuana and who controlled that particular corner or community. But we can't leave out that there are other sort of what we call structural violence factors that also impact on what's going on in the communities.
And Tamara, let me ask you about guns. I mean, we're talking largely about homicides with the use of a firearm. How easy is it to get a gun illegally in Philadelphia?
It's just too accessible. Kids at the age of 13, 14 years old can get a gun. That's crazy right there. I think just recently in South Philadelphia, you had two brothers. One brother shot another brother. How do you stop that? How do you stop a brother from shooting another brother? You know what I mean? So it's the mentality. But in addition to that, you have to think about the rise of social media. Oftentimes, I get screenshots of kids beefing on social media, and people see it as small things, but you got to be in the know to know what's going on. And sometimes it'll be situations where someone didn't like a picture, or someone sent some, they sent a subliminal message, and now they're beefing and someone gets shot. People don't hear about those stories, and they never talk about because people like myself and people like Shantae Love and other people go and intervene and stop those things. Another thing I would like to touch on too is, in order for us to approve this issue of gun violence, we got to leave politics on the other side of the room. There's been countless situations that I've known about on a confidential level where politically people didn't want you involved because they didn't want your voice in the room, and that needs to go.
What do you mean by that? Can you be more
specific? What I mean by that is that it can be certain situations where you have people that can help situations within the community, but they're left out of the conversation because of ongoing nonsense that's going on that's politically charged. So I think that all of us need to do a better job of stepping up to the plate and getting things done.
How does the city, or how does anybody or an organization get to problems within the family? You had mentioned, Shondell Ravel, the fact that or maybe it was you, Anton, about the fact that we're talking largely about single parents raising children. I'm sure many of them working really hard to do the best job that they can. But when you look at people who have spent time in prison, oftentimes there is domestic violence. I'm looking at you, Shondell. There are problems within the family that can make violence seem almost normalized.
Yeah, that's true. And the sad part about it is, you know, a lot of, you know, what is lacking is, you know, you're not meeting people where they're at. You know, that's why the approach is something that we're working on. And I'll let the deputy touch on this, you know, about how we're looking at reentry. I think is a very important part of what Philadelphia is doing.
Yeah, do you want to speak to that?
So I would definitely want to speak to reentry, but going back to your initial question, the family, my background, what's different about me, I think, that I bring to this position that others have not, is that I come from having a specialty in child welfare law, but also in child welfare, the child welfare system. That's where my heart is, right? And I was formerly deputy commissioner as well as commissioner of DHS. Understand that family and kind of family structure. That dynamic is a significant part of what you're talking about. And as we're building this plan, this roadmap to safer communities, we definitely have DHS at the table because a lot of the work that they do will have a significant impact. And how do we share information amongst agencies? What are the touch points? Many of these perpetrators and have already touched both that child welfare system as well as the police system or the prison system. How do we get that information out and utilize that and take the opportunities when they present themselves to stop it from escalating up? Now, to go back to reentry, what we need to do, and I'll be the first to say, is that we need to do a better job in the city on reentry services. We have not done a good job, and we just have to call it out for what it is. What I have asked to do, and the mayor is endorsing, and also endorsing in the plan, is to create an office of reentry so that it rises to the level as
so
many
get
other
out of
offices.
Prison.
Yes. Right now, I have an office of criminal justice under me. I have an office of violence prevention. Reentry falls under one of them, and technically, reentry is under the prisons right now. But we need an office of reentry where all of this stuff is coordinated. There's a lot of good programs in the city, but it's all very siloed, and it's not brought together well. We have a reentry coalition who does good work. We have the behind the walls prison programs on reentry, and then we have outside the walls. They've all got to be coordinated well so that they're seen. Seamless transitions, and we can do a much better job at reintegrating folks back into the community.
Does that make sense to you, Helen?
It absolutely makes sense because there's not a day, and Anton, I'm sure you and I get these same calls, right, from somebody, you know, from a 17, 18, 19-year-old to a 46, 47-year-old coming out of prison going, look, I've been looking for jobs. I've been putting in my applications like 10, 20, and that's no exaggeration, you know, a day, a week. And I'm not getting a call back, or I get a call back and then suddenly they disappear. And so they are struggling to find jobs. And again, goes back to our discussion earlier, not just, you know, jobs that pay them any wage, but a wage where they can support themselves and their families. And that just is not, does not exist. There are, like we talked about, there are programs here and there, but none, no centralized program.
And you think that would, a centralized program would make it better and easier for someone to access services?
A centralized program that's actually offering jobs that would affect a person's life. Yes, a centralized program with lots of talking and titles. We don't need another one of those.
Okay. Do we have too many of those?
Absolutely.
Okay. And yes, Anton.
And I believe, you know, I take my hat off to both of you because I get a lot of phone calls like that. But my friend just came home from jail after doing 7 years, and he's getting his diploma. And that's another thing we need to talk about. He's getting his diploma, his high school diploma. Also, he wants to work. He wants to take care of his kids. We was able to get him an interview, and he should be starting work next week. But it's like pulling tooth and nails trying to get returning citizens jobs in this city. Mm-hmm. It just seems hard. I believe we give so much money in tax breaks to big universities and different companies that when it comes to our returning citizens, it's like, we don't want to hire them. I don't think that's fair. And we need a level playing field when it comes to hiring returning citizens, Shonda, at a good wage.
Yeah, Shonda Revelle, how much would that help?
It would help a lot, you know, and just like Anton was saying that, you know, I get calls or people come to the office. We're right down the street from probation, so I talk to individuals all the time, right downstairs from the RISE program. And people are hungry for careers, not just a minimum wage job, and totally understand, you know. So you as an individual who cares, you go to whatever length it takes to get this person involved in job. But we have to realize this, right? Everybody's not employable, so we need to look at a strategy. You can't just say, here's a job, and, you know, wake up every morning and go there and do what you do, because they're not used to it. So how do you make them employable? How do you change their mindset that with good work comes good intention, it becomes comes good wage, and that's how you produce a family? Not just get money, get what you need, and move on, because the system will break down sooner or later. So you have to change their mindset and develop a system where they can understand how that living wage, you know, turns into a career, you know, then turns into something that they can call, you know, a family or a system.
Vanessa Garrett Harley, I believe I read in your report that something like a third of the residents in Philadelphia have some connection to the criminal justice system. Is that
absolutely?
That feels about right. Just to sort of put this into some kind of context.
Absolutely correct. And that's why it's so important that we raise the issue of reentry in those services and programs to a level that it can be addressed. One of the things that we're talking about doing in that report is creating what we're calling neighborhood resource centers. Some call them day reporting centers. What it would do is co-locate probation and parole with other social services in one location, because access to reentry services is voluntary. And so while many people want jobs, sometimes folks don't avail themselves to the other social services that would help build you up and sort of undergird you to get you to that point and what you need. But it also is sometimes because it is so cumbersome the way the programs are set out right now. If I have to go across the city on four different buses to all these different places to get this stuff, just as a matter of convenience and the ability to do that, I might not do it. If I can co-locate and I know I'm mandated to go see my probation or parole officer, and then I can go right across the hall and avail myself to other services, I'm much more likely to take advantage of it. And so we want to do a pilot so that that can help undergird folks, because people need not only jobs, some people need trauma therapy. Some people need additional social services work. Some people need help with getting their children back, as they may have lost their children to the child welfare system while they were incarcerated. There are a myriad of things that people need that we need to be able to build them up holistically to make them be able to sustain the jobs that they get.
Let me get Rashawn from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Rashawn, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Rashawn? All right. Well, we'll figure that out. His question was, how effective do you think the measures of violence prevention are in the city? Let me put that to you, Helen. I mean, we're talking about many different programs across a broad spectrum of needs and services.
I think up to this point, in terms of measuring the programs that are in place right now, right now, I would probably give them an F. And it's something that, you know, they are working on, that Shondell and I have had conversations about since 2017. We go back to the initial conversation about the city doing something that really hasn't been done the way it needed to be done before then. But the fact of the matter is that we're at 2019, and I don't see a system in place right now. Is it coming? I'm told it is. Right. I have faith that it will come into play, but I have huge reservations about continuing to throw money to programs that have not proven their worth. Now, you know, we can speak for another 3 hours about how do you do that, you know, and that I'm not at all suggesting that that's an easy thing to do, but it has to be done if we ever really want to see any change.
But do we know, I mentioned the Focus Deterrence Program, and it seemed to be effective where it was applied in South Philadelphia. Is that an example of something that works, or do you have an idea, at least one program that you think is worth investing in?
I have lots of ideas and programs that we need to measure before we give more money to. That's where my focus is. You know, again, I don't think there's an easy answer. I don't know which program's actually working or not because we have not measured them adequately yet.
Are we getting to that? We're almost having a break here, but go ahead, Vanessa Garrett-Harley.
So I certainly respect Helen's opinion, and I know the work that she's done on these issues, and I would not argue with her in any way that we need to do better. We definitely have to do better. I think an F is a bit harsh, though. I think that there are some programs that are definitely working. I would say it's C. I believe that there are some programs, CCIP, from what we now has not been evaluated, but just started in July 2018. But what we are getting from the community is it is definitely working and actually working in ways that we hadn't even thought about or necessarily intended in terms of how the community embraced them. And they're helping to connect members of the community and not just those impacted with that immediate gun violence situation with other social services and other city services. YVRP, when you look at the outcomes from those young people who are on that level of probation, they are much less likely to be victims of homicide.
And I do want to pick up on, just to make sure people know what all those letters mean, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We're talking about efforts here in Philadelphia to address the problem, the crisis of violence, specifically gun violence in the city. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoin. Just had a really interesting conversation off the air. Let me just reintroduce everybody. Anton Moore, president and founder of Unity in the Community, a nonprofit working on raising awareness to change the culture of violence in South Philadelphia. Helen Ubinas is a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Shondell Revelle, executive director of the Office of Violence Prevention for the City of Philadelphia. And Vanessa Garrett-Harley, she's deputy managing director for criminal justice and public safety for the City of Philadelphia. You can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. Vanessa, you mentioned CCIP and a couple of other letters. Just to translate that for our listeners.
CCIP stands for Community Crisis Intervention Program. And YVRP is Youth Violence Reduction Partnership
Program. Okay, fair enough. Do you want to respond to what was said before the break, Shondell Revelle? I mean, in terms of what your office, the Office of Violence Prevention, I mean, from your perspective, what works? What doesn't work? Big question.
It is a big question, you know, and I can't disagree, except for the grade on what Helen said.
Are you more than the C?
I'm leaning more towards the B because I'm out
all
in the
right.
neighborhood.
We'll give
with,
Helen a chance with, to come back,
with,
but yeah, go ahead.
CCIP. I'm out in the community with, you know, these incredible workers, and I've seen the things that they do, and I hear the responses from not just one part of Philadelphia, but several parts of Philadelphia. Can we develop programs, more programs? Yes, and I agree we need to do a better job of evaluating. We are doing that. Is it taking more time than we thought? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that because there are a lot of programs or it's hard to evaluate?
One thing when we sat down, right?
In 2017?
Yes. One thing that we talked about was it's a huge task, and I didn't think I was up to I didn't think I was able to do it, right? Because it was a huge task. And it would take more than just my department at that time. And I think that's why the managing director and the mayor noticed that they needed to hire, you know, more qualified help. You know,
this is for your Office of Violence Prevention.
Yes, and Director Garrett Harley was brought in, and Theron Pryde, the senior director, were brought in, and things started to develop into a actual plan. And I think that's where we're at right now.
That's where we are now.
We are at right now. I mean, yeah, we can't look backwards. We have to look forward, you know, and in developing, we couldn't stop and just wait. So in developing a program like CCIP, you know, and looking how we can incorporate YVRP, I think was an ongoing solution. And looking at how the community needed these programs and how we can just benefit from having a small portion put into the community at that time, I think went a long way. You know, one thing I just want to touch on real quick, just to kind of lend to the need in the community and then also how CCIP is affecting it. The first time, the first day they were on the job, they walked into a situation where right outside one of the police districts, a guy had been shot in the head. And he was trying to make it to the police district for help. They pulled up on the scene and they helped this individual. They stayed with him. They went and got police. And as one thing Helen said is that it's not just a person that's been shot, because they stayed with him and, you know, made sure that he was taken care of. But one thing they did do was contact his family, went to the family's house, brought the family to the emergency room, and then provided services to the family, his wife, his children, and things of that nature. You have to be able to have a holistic system. You can't just put one piece in and think it's going to work.
And taking that model, I mean, that would be perfect or near perfect. I mean, it doesn't
address
the fact
need,
that someone got shot in the head,
right,
but in terms of the response.
Because you have to look forward. Right. You can't just look at the incident and say this happened because of violence. You have to look at all the things that led up to it, but then also moving forward, all the things that come after it.
Helen, you want to respond? I want to get Anton back in.
No, I think it's a really important point where the conversation is going, the turn it took for where we're talking. We were talking about the causes of gun violence to the consequences of gun violence. And one of the things, you know, speaking of looking forward, that we have to do more of and do a better job of is understanding what happens after the police are gone, the grassroots workers are gone and all that. And, you know, today, if it hasn't posted already, I've written a column about a young man who was shot and paralyzed in 2018 and whose family is desperately seeking housing, wheelchair accessible housing, which in Philadelphia, you know, the housing stock doesn't naturally lend itself to wheelchair accessible housing. And so that's one of the things that we are often stopping this conversation at those points when someone is shot, when someone is shot and killed, when someone is shot and in the hospital. And we have to have these conversations, and we have to have the funding and programs in place to help individuals once they are home and trying to recreate their lives.
Well, and Anton, that really speaks to the psychological, the finance, the cost of this level of gun violence in Philadelphia.
I think we should stop telling people how they should feel. Yeah. When you talk to people and you go in these neighborhoods, they're not happy. They're not happy. The stories that you hear, the frustration of the gun violence, you know, guns being shot every night, they're not happy. And it makes you examine yourself of what can I do? Because some days I feel like I'm not doing enough. I know that we're doing a good job, you know what I mean? But if the people aren't feeling it, then we should reexamine what we're doing. One of the things I'm looking at and that we're proposing to do is go into the schools, take some male role models, work with some at-risk youth and try to turn those young men around. Because if you look at it, if you talk to the principals and you talk to the counselors, they know what a lot of these kids are going through. And a lot of things that go on in school, it spills out into the neighborhoods. And those kids end up becoming the terrorists of the neighborhood, end up tearing up the community. So you go and work with these kids in the middle school level, the high school level, and in elementary school level, and try to turn them around before it's too late. Because a lot of these kids, we don't want to admit it, some of these kids off the far deep end and say, look, it's no turning back. But if we put more measures on a prevention side, then things can actually get better.
I know you want to say something. Let me just read a couple of comments. And actually, Rashawn is back, and I want to get him on the air. A tweet from Thomas: tackling gun violence here in Philadelphia and elsewhere will require a multi-pronged effort. It must be seen as a health crisis, far stricter gun laws, education that teaches morals to our young people. I think we touched on some of that. Ryan emails, can we just call it what it is, institutional racism? There is a school-to-prison pipeline set up which affects African-Americans much more than whites. Little to no opportunity in these communities, which is truly sad. Let's put the same amount of effort into making African-Americans to have the same opportunity as the well-off do. Do you want to speak to that, Vanessa?
So,
are we talking institutional racism here?
We're talking, we call it out more structural violence, but that could have some component of it. While it may not even been intended, some programs, depending upon how they were developed or done over the years, may have had that unintended effect. But we do call it out, and there is no coincidence in my mind that in these communities, which is part of why when people say, why are you talking about blight when you're talking about somebody getting killed? Why you want to clean up a lot? Because when we overlay the maps between the areas that have the highest incidence of gun violence, highest incidence of homicides. Those are also the same areas that have the highest amount of folks living under the poverty line, the highest amount of unemployed, the highest amount of people who don't have a high school diploma or aren't really connected to education, and the highest areas of the city with the abandoned buildings and the overgrown lots and all of that. So all of that is not coincidental. Now, I don't know if all of it is because of racism, but it is not coincidental in terms of the way the communities are and how we're addressing them. I do want to say Anton made an important point when he said, you know, you got to listen to the communities, hear from the communities what's going on. That's why we embarked in that community listening tour that I talked about earlier. And I had the mayor was out there with me on several of them. There were no cameras because this wasn't about a press event or any of that. It was an opportunity for him to hear one-to-one what was going on in the communities and how these people felt. And I sat with him as we talked to mothers who had lost their children, buried their children, or seen their nephews killed, or, you know, whatever. And it puts a very different picture on it for you. It gives a level of urgency that I can't even begin to describe to you. Hence why we called it out and had to come up with that plan in 100 days, which isn't a lot of time to do anything that comprehensively, but people are dying every day, people are getting shot every day, and we've recognized that in terms of the urgency in terms of getting the work done here in the city.
Let me get Rashawn back on the air. Rashawn calling us from Philadelphia. Rashawn, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I believe this is a very great conversation that we're having.
Thank you.
But again, my thing is, it's a conversation. You know, and, you know, a person that I work with deeply is Anton. How you doing, good brother? And
good
brother
morning.
Shondell.
Good morning.
And they both know how my work has been over the past 20 years or so. One of the first things that I'm about is, when do we start implementation? You know, because conversation, like you just said, has been going on since 2017, right? We keep redeveloping, re-gauging, you know, back and forth. But when do we actually start doing things? Now, I'm proud of many organizations around the city doing things, but when can we collectively just,
sure,
just like stop all the conversation? Because as now as we having a conversation, there's somebody with the potential in their mind thinking that they should hurt another human being.
Rashawn, yeah, absolutely. We know what you're saying. I'm really glad you called us back. And actually, since he mentioned your name, Shondell Revelle, he's saying, okay, conversation is good. When are we going to see tangible, actual results?
Well, I think we're seeing results now. I mean, I don't believe they're coming as fast as we want, but I do think we're seeing results. You know, and one of the things that we need to do is keep pushing forward. You know, the conversations, as Rashawn said, are good, but we can't get stuck. We can't stop and still conversate, mm-hmm. you know, just like part of the evaluation process. We can't just stop and wait for that to happen. We need to keep moving forward, right, and keep addressing these problems in the community.
Will we know, Vanessa Garrett-Harley, if this is working when the rates of shootings go down?
That's certainly one of the success measures. One of the things I just wanted to go back to The question was, when will we get started with an implementation? We have started implementation of that plan. We have, and part of what we built into the plan so that it would not just become another piece of paper that goes on the shelf is a governance structure and an implementation team. That team is headed by myself and Commissioner Richard Ross from the Police Department. We have at that table the heads of the various city agencies who we need in place to do the work so that we can make sure that everybody remains accountable and that is moving in a timely way. We meet biweekly, and under that we have action teams that we're calling out who will be meeting weekly, who are actually trying to address their pieces of the plan that definitely have already started. Mm-hmm. We've already started the expansion of the Community Crisis Intervention Program. We've already started Operation Pinpoint, the police violence prevention strategy or reduction strategy, which is embedded in the plan. There are pieces of that that has already begun. There's definitely work that has already begun. I definitely hear what he's saying. The RFP is up for the fiduciary so that we could give out those targeted community investment grants. It closes on March 11th. By March 22nd, we plan to have selected who that individual will be and be able to get out there and message to the communities that they can apply for the grants. And it'll be a short turnaround time, we hope, in terms of when we actually get their applications and when we actually can put some money back in that community.
And so what's your definition of success?
Definition of success is actually measuring the programs and see if they're actually really working. One of the things I would definitely suggest to the mayor's office, and I said this to him as well, is going out into the community and selling this plan. You see how you guys had the press conference at City Hall? Go out there to Grace Ferry and sell that plan to the community. Go out there in Strawberry Mansion and sell that plan to the community, because it gives the community that sense of hope that they're looking for. Right now, people feel like, oh, nothing is happening. Nothing is going on. There's no plan. There's no, because I've talked to a couple people, said, did you see the plan? And they said, what plan? Uh-huh. They didn't even have a clue that a plan existed. So one of the things I think we need to do, and what's the name did this well, the Tea Party. When they were selling their plan to change America, they went in every neighborhood. And even though they got shouted and screamed at, they came out on top at the end and said, people said, you know what? This is what they stand for. Because what people can never say is, you didn't put up anything to try to fix this.
Right. I think it's got to be about transparency and accountability, but it's also got to be about flexibility. And what I mean by that is that you have to try things. There's absolutely no harm in trying everything. Try it all. But when you see it's not working, don't wait on it. It's not working. Let's try it. Let's dump it, fail fast, move on to the next thing. And that's something that I think that sometimes the city hesitates to do, doesn't do fast enough. It sort of gets stuck on a program or a person or politics or whatever and continues to sort of throw money on it, at it, support, rather than just saying, you know, we tried it, didn't work, we're moving on. And so we need to do more of that.
Is this an emergency, though, Helen?
This has been an emergency for years. This way predates me. I'm sure it predates most of us sitting at this table. It's been an epidemic way longer than that. This is a crisis, and it's all hands on deck, and it's got to supersede politics and paychecks and titles. And when I gave the city an F for, you know, for sort of measuring, you know, programs, that F goes not just to the city but also to the politicians who are more worried about their reputations than actually people losing their lives. That F goes, I'm turning it to myself, to news organizations who are not covering this the way that we should be covering it. You know, there's plenty of blame to go around, but we have to stop blaming each other and start going forward and doing something about it, because lives are being lost every single day.
Vanessa Garrett Harley, I'm giving you the last word, 30 seconds. And it sounds like, from what I hear from all four of you, is that there are certain parts of the city where we know this truly is a crisis, and we know that that's really where the problem lies.
Absolutely. It's a small amount of people who are really creating most of the havoc in the city. Right. And so the Operation Pinpoint part of this, the centralized part, is that we are using our data and other intelligence to be able to target those specific areas in the community to figure out which areas do you need to deploy your resources in. I agree with the flexibility, because times change, communities change, and reasons change. So we are targeting those areas. And as the police target an area that they know certain things are happening, we're also targeting so we can undergird the area, overlay it with social services. I believe that working together with the police department, the way that we are, this holistic, comprehensive kind of approach is definitely the remedy to lessening the amount of shootings and homicides in the city, and hopefully revitalizing many of these communities as we move forward.
Well, my thanks to all four of you for joining us. We will follow up as well. That's Vanessa Garrett Harley, Shondell Ravel, Helen Ubinas, and Anton Moore, our guests in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. And the show is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.